Has anyone got any questions for Elizabeth? Any of the young people? Yes. Why don't you come forward? We've actually got a microphone. Mm-hmm.
Hi.
All right, we're good. Kia ora, my name is Aaron and I'm from New Zealand. I'd just like to thank you very much for that, Elizabeth. My question is actually to James, if I may. Now, I guess I identify as a youth, as a young person, but to me that is nine-tenths a label, and what I identify more as is a person, a human being, and I'm here now, and me and all the other young people here are working now on these issues. That's my challenge to all of you, that us young people here now are here to work with you. We're not in the future, we're here now. And James, I have two questions for you. I'd like to know where you get your hope from.
Well, I think the meaning of life is to, for a human being, is to find a way to live happily and productively, and the meaning of a purposeful life is to find a purposeful life. And my life is very purposeful. You know, I live in a place that I care about. My activities are meaningful to me. I've built a social network that is meaningful and rewarding to me. I allocate my time in such a way that, you know, that's meaningful and rewarding. And I regard these things as fortunate, good choices that I've made through a difficult process. I get a lot of letters from young people, including a lot of young people who are floundering around. And in my opinion, it's the natural part of the natural process of being a young person that you do have to do a certain amount of floundering around, for the excellent reason that you yourself individually are an emergent system, and you are emerging into an understanding of the kind of world that you're in and the kind of environment you're in and the kind of forces that are acting upon you that will shape your behavior. And these things are mutually self-informing. The forces in your life will inform you of what you have to do, and the choices that you make will inform you of what some of the forces in your life will be. Like if you make a choice to live in a certain place, you know, that will affect you directly through the decisions you've made, through your behavior. So that's how I live, and that's how, you know, how it applies to young people. I've got to say, as a young person myself, when I was 23 years old, I had a very difficult youth, full of anxiety and anxiety, depression, and difficulty in deciding which path to take and how to do it and how to do it in a productive way. And I resolved those things for myself, but I also observed how emergent it was.
Thank you for that. That brings up one thing for me, is that I wonder how many non-young people spend a decent amount of time floundering around.
Well, we can put it this way. You know, there are an awful lot of people in the society that I'm part of who, for one reason or another, are leading purposeless lives of anime, depression, anxiety, alienation, and loneliness. But part of this has to do with, you know, the technological blandishments that we've given ourselves. You know, to put it more bluntly, you know, you've got a large percentage of the population out there eating too much, drinking too much, having no control over their behavioral urges, engaging in futile behaviors like internet pornography and gambling. You know, we live in an extremely purposeless society in an actual physical environment that is probably the greatest generator of anxiety and depression that we know. There's not enough Prozac in the world to make Americans feel good about their surroundings because they're so degrading.
Okay, and just my final question. Sorry to hassle you so much. I'd like to know what it is to you to be a part of this earth.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'd like to know what it is, what it means to you to be a part of the earth.
Well, it means that I have a role to play. I play it the best I can, that I have to prepare for, you know, for not being here. I often think, you know, being 58 years old, you know, I'm entering the checkout zone myself. And I find a certain amount of comfort in the idea that, you know, I'm not the transmitter. I'm only one of the little radios of, you know, the 6.5 billion radios, not including the other animals. So, you know, I'm just a receiver of the transitions that are coming from another place. And I'm not a religious person, per se, but I think that that's true. I'm also not entirely sure that, you know, there aren't simultaneous universes operating, you know, at the same time. So,
thank you very much for that answer.
Thanks, Aaron. Any questions for Elizabeth? Yes.
Hi, thank you both for your presentations. I've learned tremendously. You know, one of the things I feel the Native American people have taught us is because they're so connected with nature, they inevitably have a tremendous reverence and understand about what Elizabeth was explaining, the whole process of how we're all part of a bigger system, we're just cells in this huge universe. And, you know, it seems to me from my experience, most of the people that really care about saving the environment are not necessarily the people that are most afraid of what's going to happen, but they're the people who actually have firsthand experience of being outdoors and, you know, communing with nature. And at the same time, it's a blessing that we have technology and we've got to the informational age. And, you know, most of us are becoming technophiles. And, you know, the question that I ask myself, and I'd like to ask both of you, is how can we reintegrate with nature and become again part of this living system and at the same time, you know, embrace our technology? It's like, you know, the Japanese call the new technology, the new generations, the thumb generation, because they spend a lot of time indoors, you know, with technology. So how can we, these two worlds be combined? How can we find harmony like that?
One of the things I've noticed in my grandchildren's generation is that they're not free to run around in nature and explore and become inventive and creative within it the way I was able to when I was a child. And that's one of the sad commentaries we have to make on this culture, that it isn't safe for children to be alone in the wilderness anymore. And we need to recreate that. So one of our jobs is literally to recreate free wild spaces where children can interact with nature safely. I love technology when it's appropriate. I'm happy that our communications technology is smaller and lighter on the earth, and I know that computers can be made sustainably and recyclably and things like that. Germany has gone a very long way towards recyclable technology, and so I see no reason at all why we can't end up with elegant simplicity in our lifestyles, meaning that we will have comforts and we will have technology, but we won't have to have 100 pairs of shoes in the closet or a television set for each individual in a separate little room. You know, I just was at the California Students for Sustainability Coalition and Reverential Ecology annual retreat down in Joshua Tree in Southern California, Buildings by Frank Lloyd Wright, A Desert Environment. And I went to a workshop on building cities in deserts. And I came out of there saying, I can't wait to live in a desert. Most of the technology they were drawing on was from ancient Morocco and the ancient Middle East, when people had undercity cisterns with wonderful acoustics where you could play music without having to have a lot of electronic amplifiers. Sunken gardens, narrow, tall streets with high walls so that the sun is only looking down into it very briefly before it's gone again. In other words, taking advantage of crevices for shade and harvesting of water and sleeping during the hot hours of the day and partying at night and having roof pools, you know, tanks on roof that will store hot water to heat you at night and reflect off heat in the daytime. You know, we put that ancient technology together with modern technology, and we can live wonderful, beautiful, sustainable, even not just survival, but thrival on this planet, even if it's a few degrees hotter. So I said, why should we not be able to combine modern technology and the profound love of and proximity to nature? We just have to recreate the opportunity to get the kids out there along with their screens or whatever. Mm-hmm. It can be done.
I personally have a lot of mixed feelings about the whole technology thing. One of the things that I've noticed, you know, the title of the book that I'm going to be writing next, I have one that's finished that hasn't come out yet. The next one I'm going to write is called Too Much Magic, The Diminishing Returns of the American Dream. I'm very suspicious about the whole technological thing, if only for one reason. It doesn't create any more hours in the day. And you end up being enslaved in one way or another, whether it's pleasurable or not, to your computer. And I think that's a big problem. I'm going to be a little disjointed about answering your question. I'm very skeptical about the romanticization of Native Americans. You know, we're now going through that in the United States because our culture is such a thumping failure. But, you know, most of the Native Americans I've become acquainted with are living in trailers, drinking themselves to death. So I don't necessarily consider them to have mediated their, you know, whatever emergent system they're doing is not working out that well either. The romanticization of nature, of wilderness itself is a problem for us. You know, it turns up in the dialogue that we're having about the kind of landscapes and urban habitats and human habitats that we can or should or might create. And one of the interesting things is the people I know who spend most of their time outdoors, their sole preoccupation is with technological mediation for their experience outdoors. You know, what kind of great new crampons they have or pitons or, you know, what kind of great new universal FM radio they've got that's this big that can fit in their backpack, you know.
I want to send them out there without anything.
Well, there was the old thing, you know, the old idea of, what was it, Outward Bound, where they would take a kid and give him a match, you know, and that would be all he could depend on. But I'm pretty skeptical about I remain kind of skeptical about the technological mediation of our predicament. And my sense of things is that, for better or for worse, there's a convulsion that's involved. And one of the big mistakes that people are making, in my opinion, who are even thinking about these things all around the world, and especially in the United States, is that we're entitled to an orderly transition. Hmm. That's a big mistake. And, you know, it speaks to our sense of entitlement. And again, you know, that juvenile idea that if you wish for stuff, it happens.
Thank you.
I would say we're free to make an orderly transition, but it will require a lot of proactive thinking and sensible behavior.
Could you just give us your name? Can you just give your name first if you're giving a question? Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Santoris. I want to say thank you for your amazing optimism, first of all. That's incredible.
And optimists have more fun.
I agree. I'm very curious of your concept about globalization. Have you seen the Wikipedia definition of globalization? It's very negative.
Oh, too bad. I'll have to go rewrite it.
Yes, please. Yeah, that would. I would definitely like, if you want to say a little bit more about that here and then rewrite it, please.
Say more about what?
Your positive.
My positive approach.
Approach to globalization. Yeah.
Well, I don't anymore want to give up the word globalization to the people attacking and rightly attacking win-lose economies. Because I think it's a much larger process, and I get that as an evolution biologist. My hope comes from seeing how many species before us have learned, have gone through the hostilities into the cooperative mode, and invented sophisticated technologies during the hostile phase that they then applied during the cooperative phase. So if our ancient archaebacterial ancestors could learn this without benefit of brain, I should think that we could. You know, we have all the information. We know how they did it now. We know how the multicelled creatures form. All this information is there. So if we would respect nature for, by the way, always capitalize Earth when you write it, the way you would Venus and Mars, yeah. And you don't say the Earth when you can just use Earth like a proper name. These things matter. You see, publishers will argue and say it's convention, but it's incorrect. It's a proper name. And we need to respect it. We need to love it. We need to learn from it. After all, every kind of technology we've ever invented has been inspired by nature because there's nothing else to be inspired by. Right? It all comes from nature. We fly like birds. We tunnel like moles. We spin like spiders. We make computers that are supposed to be simulating our brains. Right? Well, we need to grow our brains up. And so I'm optimistic because it's been done so often before, because I see it on the human agenda. I am so excited about the hot age. I could spit, you know. I mean, it's the best thing that's come along in my lifetime. I have less time than you to go, and I want to see some good changes going. So as far as I'm concerned, bring it on, and young people, don't worry about the messes we've made. Just look closely at all the stupidities your elders have carried out before you, and just don't do them anymore. Mm. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you both. Is that sort of like good kid, bad kid? Thank you very much. What a great contribution.
Wonderfully good fun.
Thank you.